We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll discuss Perseverance Theater's new production, The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity. We'll get an update on this weekend's Preparedness Expo, Ready or Not, Don't Get Caught, with guests Michelle Brown and Andrew Bogar. We'll hear about Sunday's Family Day at the City Museum, and Scott Griffith will be here to highlight the Glacier Swim Club activities. So those interviews coming up, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. And weather for the rest of today, partly cloudy with patchy fog, lows in the mid-40s. Tomorrow, partly sunny with patchy fog, highs in the mid-50s. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders from across the country are in Washington, D.C. this week, meeting with members of Congress, federal officials, and White House staff. The National Congress of American Indians is hosting the Tribal Unity Impact Days. Healthcare, land, public safety, and appropriations are among their focus. On Tuesday, leaders met with senators on the Indian Affairs Committee and Indian Health Service officials. Senator John Hoeven says the committee recently introduced legislation to increase accountability and transparency at IHS. The bill's intent is to improve the delivery of care, which includes strengthening recruitment and retention of medical staff and leadership. The Dry Creek Band of Pomo Indians in California is joining the Alabama Coushatta Tribe of Texas to help with hurricane relief efforts. The tribes are rallying Indian country for support to aid those struggling with the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Tribal chairman of the Dry Creek Band of Pomo Indians, Chris Wright, says they're donating $25,000 to help people with food find a place to stay and rebuild. The tribes say they plan to distribute the funds immediately. Meanwhile, tribal, federal, and other agencies continue to assess the needs of communities impacted by Hurricane Irma. A number of federal agencies, including the Indian Health Service, have been assisting in relief efforts. According to an Indian Health Service blog, IHS is working with local service units and tribal organizations. 58 U.S. Public Health Service officers are aiding the IHS. The Seminole and Miccosukee tribes in Florida are among communities assessing needs. The Navajo Nation says children on a bus hit by an alleged drunk driver in Arizona are reported to be okay. According to the tribe, on Monday, the driver collided with a Head Start school bus in the community of Whippoorwill. Seven children were on the bus and were checked for injuries. Police say the driver, Virgil Yellowhorse, was arrested for driving under the influence and other charges. A passenger in the vehicle was arrested for public intoxication. CBS News reports prosecutors in Brazil are investigating allegations that gold miners killed members of an uncontacted Amazon tribe. Advocates are asking prosecutors to look into an incident near the border of Peru. Indigenous organizations and advocates say uncontacted tribes are facing increased threats from gold miners in the Amazon rainforest and are asking the government to help protect them. Prosecutors have opened an investigation into the reports of the killings. Three border cities in Arizona proclaimed September Cocopah Month in honor of the Cocopah Indian Tribe's 100th anniversary of federal recognition. KAWC's Stephanie Sanchez reports.
The Cocopah, also known as the River People, have long lived along the lower Colorado River and Delta. In 1917, President Woodrow Wilson signed an executive order that federally recognized the tribe. The recognition made them eligible for federal funds and established their reservation. As the tribe marks what officials call a bittersweet centennial, three border cities, including Yuma, passed a proclamation declaring September as Cocopah Month. Cocopah Indian Tribe Councilwoman Rosa J. Long calls it a milestone for the tribe.
It's history made for us. I think that having that done is, it shows a great friendship that we've built throughout the years, you know, for them to do that for us and to take us into consideration.
Cocopah Indian Tribe Vice Chairman J. Deal Begay says it's also a great opportunity to bring awareness of the Cocopah culture.
And that's really what it is. You know, we as a Cocopah, we've been here for thousands of years, and it seems like when you go around Yuma, a lot of people don't know about Cocopah.
The Yuma County communities will display a billboard showing a timeline of Cocopah history in their city halls. For National Native News, I'm Stephanie Sanchez.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations. Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are here to talk about the Perseverance Theater's new production. Welcome to Juno Afternoon.
Thank you, Shelley.
I'm here with Jacob Athiel and Art Roach, and they're going to tell us all about it. My first question is, the title of the show is The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity. What is the meaning behind that title and that name?
I think you should answer that, Jake.
Oh, you're just going to throw me under the bus from the beginning? Oh,
this is a good start.
The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity. So it's about this play about wrestlers and WWE-style wrestling and all that. And right at the top, you always notice if it's Dwayne Johnson, if it's The Rock, if it's John Cena, they always have these huge elaborate entrances. The music comes up. Everybody gets up on their feet and
the
dances.
The fireworks go off.
Oh, the background dancers come in. It's it's this huge production, and it's American entertainment. It's lights. It's flashing. It's people are jumping up and down, and it's about this guy. It's the play revolves around this guy Macedonio Guerra, and he plays the mace, and he's this really amazing wrestler who never gets an elaborate entrance because he's a really amazing wrestler. Because the thing about wrestling and the thing about really combat in theater in general is if you're beating someone up, if you're the person doing the beating up, you have to do very little work. If you're getting beaten up, if you have to look like you're getting beaten up, that's where the real work is. That's where the art is. These are the people who have to sell it. And this is about this guy, Macedonio Guerra, who never gets this elaborate entrance, but everybody else in the play seems to get one. There's about seven or eight of them where the lights come down and there's fog and there's these huge things and these women dancing and all that. And he just has to stand there and watch it all happen.
And then do all the work.
And then back
he does
it up.
All the work.
Exactly.
So Mace, he's not the main character, or he is the main character, but he's not Chad Deity, mm-hmm. and he doesn't win a lot.
No, he's uncharismatic. Mace is played by Enrique Bravo, who is this local celebrity, and he's this amazing actor. And trust me, it is a stretch for him to play uncharismatic because he's
yeah,
one of the most.
He's not charismatic at all.
Oh my goodness, never. This man is he's an easy sell from the get-go. And you follow his story along the entire way. And it ends up with Chad Deity, who's played by Vimal Cephas, who is Chad Deity. This man oozes charisma. And the second he comes out, he doesn't move very much. He isn't, you know, extremely agile or anything of the sort. But he's got the smile. He's got the muscles. He's got the look. And so that's what the franchise backs, these huge guys that can sell, and so they get into the ring and beat up people like Mace, who can't really hold a microphone and talk too well.
You had told me before we started that this play is really more about wrestlers, not wrestling exactly, but
right.
Would you like to say more about that?
Well, I think that you kind of said it really well, Shelley. I think these guys never get competitive about their entrances. That's mm-hmm. a joke, right? They're always competitive about their entrances.
Always trying to outdo each
other. And poor Mace never even gets one. That's one of the first lines of the play is the guy over the voiceover mic says, well, here's Mace, and I don't know where he's from or how much he weighs, or he doesn't get an entrance, so he's already there, and that's that. And then Enrique, the lights come up, and Enrique takes off his mask, and he tells you who he is, which is a great monologue from him. It's a great performance from him. And I think what I loved about the play when we were thinking about producing it is how funny it is and how it's really about something. It's just about how we package things and what's real and what's not real. Enrique has another line later where he's just like, I'm an athlete, I'm an entertainer, and can I have one honest moment in my public life ever? The answer is maybe, well, you'll have to decide for yourself if he has a shot at that. Yeah.
So you're the artistic director, and Jacob, you play a character in the production. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your character?
Oh, I play the coolest man ever. His name is VP. He's this Indian kid from Brooklyn, and he is a hip-hop. He's amazing at basketball. He's athletic. The ladies love him. It is reciprocated. He loves the ladies, and it is the most energetic, fun part to play. He kind of comes in, and Mace discovers him playing basketball, and he tries to bring him into the wrestling world because he sees how charismatic this guy is. And that's exactly what Chad Deedy has. And he's introduced into this world. And the truth about professional wrestling, so I have a bunch of friends, theater friends, who don't like to admit that they're big wrestling fans. And they are wrestling fans, and I'm a huge wrestling fan. But there's something about that world that is a little dark. It is, WWE is pretty sexist and pretty racist, but at the same time, as a brown guy, I love it. And I have to come to terms with what it is about that. And this play really tackles that. It gets into the nitty gritty. And the coolest thing about it is it's not that preachy. It fools you into thinking because you're too busy laughing to realize that you're actually opening your mind and opening your eyes to different things. And so if you walk away from this play, we're going to booby trap you into opening your mind to new things. It's the best part.
That's really cool. I can kind of relate because, I'm a woman and I love football and the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
It creates a lot of conflicts in my mind.
Exactly. But
anyway, this sounds like a super interesting production. And now I'm going to turn to you again, Art. As the artistic director, what kind of challenges did you have to overcome to get this up and running?
Oh, here we go. 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, we had to build a wrestling ring, and that's there are very specific things, as it turns out. And Greg Mitchell, who's designed here a number of times before, got that task. I kind of threw it at him a little bit last minute. And then we have a new technical director this year, the guy that built the sets. So he took the job and then found out that his first project was building a wrestling ring. Mm-hmm. So that's been pretty fun. There's a lot. They're very specific things. So there's that. And then you need to find three guys, really four guys, who are willing and able to do this kind of staged combat and are also really strong actors. That's not easy. But it's a really terrific group, and it was a vehicle for Enrique. So you need a guy who can do all that stage combat, and like Jay says, he dies. He's beaten all the time, so he's actually doing a lot of the work. So it's a ton of work for him, and then he kind of carries the show. So he has a lot to say, he has a lot to play, and he's on stage a lot. So it's a great body of work from Enrique.
Do you guys do all your own stunts?
Oh, sadly.
it
would be amazing if, as we were carried up into the air, the lights could go down and a stunt double could be brought in. No, it's all the bruises are real, and Enrique gets dropped from about 6 feet in the air by other actors, and there's an actor that gets hit by a chair. It's all real, and it sounds terrifying and scary and all that. It all works, and it's funny, and it's something that really everyone's going to enjoy.
Oh, yeah. It sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. So you kind of took a leaf out of the WWE book, right? Doing all this actual wrestling and actual physicality on stage.
But the cool thing is we had Frank Delaney. Frank Delaney's a fight choreographer, and he's a theater fight choreographer. Oh. And so he could actually modify some of the moves. So these moves are done, and these people are getting genuinely injured, but they have to do it once, maybe twice a week on Saturday night or when WWE goes up. We have to do it about six, seven times a week. And so he actually switched it around so that we can absorb the blows a little easier and such. So it's this wonderful meeting of theater and wrestling where, yeah, we're getting the blows, but the stage is a little softer than usual.
So
when we hit the ground, it isn't as painful as usual.
Wow, I cannot wait to see this. Oh, thanks for being willing to put yourself through it, because it sounds extremely entertaining. I understand that Shona Osterhout is the director this time. Is that right?
Yeah.
What's it like working with her?
Okay, so this is the truth about it. We have, yeah, let's
Shona,
get into
are you
this.
Listening?
We have Richard J. Carter in it, Tom Robinault, Enrique Bravo, Vimal Sifas. These are fantastic actors put in there. And then you introduce someone like Shona, it just becomes fun. It's this entire process. It's hard work, but she ends up guiding us in such a natural, easy way, and everything is a collaboration with her. And it's not – this sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but this is – five big dudes you're putting into a room. There's a lot of testosterone there. And it's something that I don't know how Shona so masterfully did it, but she gets all of us to work together really well. She's in charge, then she's our best friend, and she can be our confidant, and she can be everything at the drop of a hat. She's literally exactly what we needed.
I'll just add to that that she was the first person I thought of, and I said, Shona, this play, it has kind of an attitude, and it needs to be directed with an attitude, and I think you're going to know exactly what I mean. She said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to do that. I said, but it's a lot of time with dudes, you know. And if you don't know Shona, her son was born about a year ago, and she's had this male dog forever. And she said, it was just like being at home. It'll be fine. And she's very at home there.
Yeah, she is – she's just amazing.
She's great.
She's a weird combination of she can be so arrogant and confident about things while being so endearing. That was everything my character needed to be. And so most of my time I was just watching her.
Yeah. That's cool. I'd expect nothing less than perfection and a little bit of extra from Shona. So the play opens on Friday, is that correct?
Right. Yeah, we've had our first preview last night. We have another preview tomorrow.
That's what I thought. Pay as you can.
Yeah, it's a pay as
night.
You can. Right. Show up if you can. And Friday we open up and we go until October 7th.
That's right.
Yeah.
Great. Sounds like a good run. Yeah. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Art Roach, the artistic director of The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity, new production at Perseverance Theater, and Jacob Athiel, who is an actor in the play.
Good pronunciation.
Thank you. So thanks both for being here. Where can we find out more information?
ptalaska.org. The tickets are at the usual places, Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, The Jack, or you can call 463-TIXS.
Great. Anything else you guys would like to add?
We just put our subscriptions for the rest of the season on sale. It's our annual PFD sale. So from now until mid-October, you can save money and get the whole season and still be a super subscriber, which is a new benefit this year.
Sounds like a great deal.
Yeah.
Thank you both again for being here. I really look forward to seeing the production.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you, Shelley.
En mi vientre, los segundos pasados, cargados, tatuados en mi espalda, empapados, aunados a espasmos de llanto y de risa. He andado sin pausa, sin prisa, así de lento el momento, y no termina así de lento, cruzando entre las espinas. Dime qué se siente, dime qué se siente, dime qué se siente el sudor en la frente. Dime qué se siente, dime si presientes, dime qué se siente el sudor en la frente. Sí, señor. Sistema y toma mi cuerpo, lo hace
flotar, respirar y tranquilo. Estoy en el sitio como para ir a sembrar un poco y después recogerlo poco a poco. Llevarlo a mi bodega y ver lo que me interesa, lo bueno, lo malo, lo que ocurre.
Viene, viene el que ausenta, la mantiene. Viene, viene, viento, caricias, levedad y sabor. Fuego, sonrisa, realidad y dolor.
Sí, señor.
And as bad as I want to walk into the boss's office and say that wrestling is not a legitimate sport, and I'm losing because he's writing scripts that tell me to lose, I don't. Because it's actually a good job, a dream job. And I'm happy to lose. And I don't mind that my knees hurt, my everything's hurt, because I'm one of the wrestlers, and I'm in love with who I am.
The elaborate entrance of Chad Deity at Perseverance Theater runs September 14th to October 7th. Tickets at ptalaska.org, The Jack, and 463-TIXS.
Programming is supported by Alaska Graphics, showcasing businesses and organizations through on-screen advertising at Gross Alaska Movie Theaters, now including animation, video, and optional audio. Information on advertising on the big screen at akonscreen.com.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's about 21 minutes after the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me are Andrew Bogar and Michelle Brown, having way too much fun over the other side of the desk. They're here to talk about the Preparedness Expo this weekend. Ready or not, don't get caught. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Okay, now I just said your names, but maybe you could introduce yourselves and just tell the good people a little bit about how you're involved with this event.
Ladies first.
I was saying he could go first. I'm Michelle Brown, and I'm with Emergency Programs and the Local Emergency Planning Committee. You know it as the LEPC, and they are the sponsors for the event.
And my name is Andrew. I'm the Disaster Program Manager for the American Red Cross here in the Southeast, and I've been helping coordinate the event this year.
Andrew, you said you're deploying tomorrow. Do you want to say anything about that?
Really quick. I don't want to detract too much, but I am deploying to Florida in response to Hurricane Irma, and I'll be gone from 2 to 3 weeks.
That's what you do.
Yep.
And you're missing the expo.
I know.
I
want to miss everybody.
Well, thanks for doing that. I'm sure they'll be very glad to have your help down there. Okay, so you were here just about a couple weeks ago talking about the expo, giving us a little bit of an overview. What's new since the last time we talked about it?
Well, the last time we were looking to finish, wrap up our exhibitor list and to get presenters and talk about storytellers. And we've got all of that. It's all in line. It's really exciting. We have 53 exhibitors this year. We've got 30 different presentations, trainings for you. And we've got stories from Mudroom that are going to be told, and then local people that are going to be able to have open mic to tell stories of what they've done. So that's new and exciting. So right now we're trying to get the public ramped up so that they know this is not just a learning event to get them prepared, but it's also going to be real fun.
It sounds like it. Are these going to be like survival stories or preparedness stories?
They are. The Mudroom did a couple of whole forums on survival stories, and the other one was on near-death experiences, and really great stories. And so we've got some good video that Larry Rowdy Dog Images, Larry. He helped put all that together, which I was very, very grateful for, and it's great so that it makes it interesting to listen to.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And do you have some exhibitors or interactive activities at booths that you want to highlight?
So two outcomes at the top of my head that I'd like to mention. One is a Southeast Extinguisher. And they are actually doing two really, for me, they're some of the most important things any resident could learn. One is how to use a fire extinguisher. We all, from the Red Cross, we're talking about having smoke detectors and fire extinguishers inside your house.
And that's with real fire extinguishers that you get to use.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
They're actually going to let you use real fire extinguishers. And the idea is, so you have, if you were ever to do that in your kitchen, in your house, and you would need that, have the confidence in your skills to be able to protect your family. The other one is what's called citizens CPR. So if as you're going throughout your day, you're going about your own business, if someone were to need CPR, this is to give you the skill set to be able to perform CPR and, you know, be that essentially first responder. I mean, there's no fast response than being the person right there. But you need to have confidence in yourself that you know how to do that. And they'll be doing that for us at the expo, and we're really happy to have them there for it.
And then another one that I wanted to mention is the 4-H air rifle shooting range. Super fun, and really learn the safety skills and things that you need to do. And any age can participate. And Library Big Read, NEA Big Read, is Station 2 this year, which is an apocalyptic event. Wrap my mouth around that. And they're also going to have a kids' play area so that kids, little kids can play with learning things.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Actually, they'll be here. I think they're up next to talk about the Big Read and Sweet. Family Day and all those events, too.
Great.
Who should come to this Preparedness Expo?
Everyone. Just that's an easy answer. Everyone. If you live in Juneau and you can hear my voice, then you should absolutely come visit this. It doesn't matter if you are a leader in the religious community, if you are a business owner, if you are a single person, if you're a college student. Your safety and your preparedness is paramount. And this is an opportunity to learn things that you may not know or share experiences. If you have that knowledge, I'd love to hear from you. And I think there's many other here in Juneau. And collectively, we're much stronger together. We have all that knowledge here in this, you know, this is the tiniest town with the hugest heart. And I love it. And I know that we have all these resources here, but we have to bring people together and share that information.
In your expert opinion, what kind of emergency event is Juneau most prepared for in terms of response and capacity?
So the easiest way to answer that is all of them. The way we focus on disaster preparedness, response, and recovery is called all hazards. So we focus on being able to respond to all of the different disasters we could be faced with, and that takes a community. At everything, again, from businesses, churches, individuals being prepared every day to the government and nonprofit organizations, we all have a part to play.
The methodology is the same, as Andrew said. It's like once you're prepared, once you have planned to be safe in your daily activities and prepared, then you're prepared for whatever might hit. So you're going to make your life easier daily and if something bad happened. Mm-hmm.
And you can't be too prepared, huh?
No.
Or too safe, because it's a safety and preparedness expo.
Yep. And that next step is once you're working on that safety, when you're working on that preparedness, is taking an active role in your community. There's many organizations here who desperately need volunteers. And actually, with me leaving and a lot of my senior volunteers leaving, I know I can speak for my organization. We are in need of volunteers. We need volunteers, not just to go to Texas and Florida and Oregon, California, because we have shelters open in all those states right now, but we need them here locally too. So, and I know there's a bunch of other organizations that need them as well.
Right. We've got Catholic Community Services, CCFR. I mean, that list is endless in the duties. Anybody out there that has a couple of hours a month that they're willing to dedicate can be a volunteer, and this is a great place to come and learn about your partners so that you can volunteer.
Mm-hmm. So where can we find out more about the expo?
www.juneau.org, and you'll just see a link there about the expo. I'll give you the information, or you can call me at 586-0371.
Very brave, giving out your number. and I would like to add that Juneau, so the expo is this Friday and Saturday, mm-hmm. and I wanted to add that Juneau Afternoon, this show, currently listening to, will be broadcasting live from the expo Friday at 3 o'clock. We're going to be using our radio in a box, which is basically a portable radio station, which we can use to broadcast from remote locations, one of our preparedness tools. And I will be the host, and we're going to have some great guests who are related to the expo. They're going to talk about all kinds of good stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yay.
Is there anything else you two would like to add?
I just think I want to thank KTOO because they've always been really great active partners and helped us in so many ways. So they're greatly appreciated. And I want to thank Andrew for taking on helping coordinate this event, because Red Cross really did a lot to get this off the ground.
So I want to thank my volunteers. I am the only employee for the Red Cross here in the Southeast, and there's no way this doesn't happen without those volunteers. And we've got a very dedicated group here. We have some who've left and deployed, and we've got some who are holding down the fort, as it were. And so I couldn't do without them.
That's great. Well, thank you both very much for being here, speaking with Michelle Brown and Andrew Bogar about the Safety and Preparedness Expo this weekend. Andrew, good luck down in Florida.
Thank you.
Michelle, I will see you Friday.
All right. See everybody Friday.
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you here without that look upon your face. I should have changed my lock. I would have made you leave your key if I'd have known for just one second you'd be back to bother me. Oh, now go walk out the door. Just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down?
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 13th of September, 2017. It was on this day, 1814, Francis Scott Key was inspired to write the words to the Star-Spangled Banner, watching the British attack on Fort McHenry in Baltimore. The British had the upper hand in the War of 1812, just 3 weeks before. They had set fire to much of Washington, D.C., burned the Capitol, the Treasury, the President's House, President James Madison, forced to flee for his life. Americans were afraid the British might choose to invade New York or Philadelphia or Boston. The British had recently begun using rockets, a new military weapon, incendiary rockets. And Francis Scott Key watched them raining down on Fort McHenry at the mouth of Baltimore Harbor, and he assumed the fort would not be able to withstand the attack. But just after sunrise, he saw the American flag still flying over the fort. The commander of the fort, Major Armistead, had chosen to fly an enormous flag that day, 42 feet long, 30 feet high. And Francis Scott Key began writing his poem, which celebrated a battle that turned out to be the turning point of the war. And it also immortalized the flag itself as a sacred object in America. It's the birthday of Bill Monroe, born in Rosine, Kentucky, 1911, father of bluegrass, brilliant mandolin player, tenor, singer. In 1938, he formed his band, the Bluegrass Boys, which came to include over the years Don Reno, Jimmy Martin, Carter Stanley, Vassar Clements, Chubby Wise, Byron Berline, and Lester Flatt, and Earl Scruggs. It's the birthday of the pianist Clara Schumann, born Clara Wick in Leipzig, Germany, 1819. She gave a concert when she was 8 years old, and Robert Schumann, who was 17, fell in love with her. She made her formal debut at the age of 11, considered a great pianist for the rest of her life. She married Robert Schumann when she turned 21, had 7 children by him, and continued to tour and perform and compose. Played her last concert in 1891, 61 years after her career had begun. Clara Schumann, who said, "My imagination can picture no fairer happiness than to continue living for art." and it's the birthday of the British novelist and playwright John Boynton Priestley, J.B. Priestley, 1894, born in Yorkshire. Served in the infantry during World War I. Most of his friends were killed in combat. Didn't write about the war, wrote about the time before the war. Priestley said, "I belong at heart to the pre-1914 North Country." Here's a poem for today by Tim Nolan, "The Shoes of Teenage Boys." At the front door, the shoes are amazing combinations of some plastic and some unknown material developed by NASA. Even at rest, the shoes have the urgency of teenage boys, the jumping, etc., as a courtship display. Now they rest at the front door in skewed and knock-kneed and pigeon-toed repose. They mostly are very large, the shoes, at rest, but not for long. The shoes are designed to appeal as faces, so the teenage boys looking down into their faces can go out into the wide world. The Shoes of Teenage Boys, a poem by Tim Nolan from The Field, published by New Rivers Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This station receives support from Canyon Hydro, providing components, maintenance, inspection, and repair services to remote hydro producers with fly-in service available. Information about these services can be found at canyonhydro.com.
September is National Recovery Month. 2 out of 3 people experiencing mental and substance use disorders use tobacco. More than half of patients in treatment will ultimately die from a tobacco-related disease. Quitting smoking can improve recovery outcomes and reduce the risk of relapse. It decreases depression, anxiety, and stress, saves you money, and increases quality of life. For free support, contact Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or alaskaquitline.com. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Southeast and SEARCH.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's about 23 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and here with me is Kaya Hendrickson from the City Museum. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So last time you came by, Kaya, we talked about the cemetery walking tour. How did that go?
It went really well, and thankfully most of the rain got done in the morning before the tour.
Good. That's good. It was a wet one.
Yeah. So, it was a very successful tour, and we're looking forward to having more next summer.
Okay, great. Well, we'll talk more about that. But you're primarily here to talk about Family Day, and is that this Sunday?
That is this Sunday, and it's at the City Museum from 1 to 3 p.m. And this Family Day, we are doing the program as a part of the Juneau Public Library's Big Read program. And so the Big Read's book selection for the project is Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. And one of the things that they have in the book is something called a Museum of Civilization. So our Family Day is themed around that idea of a Museum of Civilization.
And in the book, they're looking at objects. It kind of takes place in the future after sort of an apocalyptic event. And they're looking at things that, like smartphones and tablets and stuff like that we have every day currently.
That's correct. And children who are born after the apocalypse or were very young at that time don't have any association with a smartphone. Like, what would you use that for? It's not useful anymore when there's no internet anymore mm-hmm. or no one to call.
So how stumped do you think the kiddos will be by the mystery objects that you guys are going to have on display?
Well, we're hoping that it'll be a challenge. There are two parts to the activity. So for one, there will be 10 objects and kids have to guess what they are. Some of the objects, I think adults will probably know, but they might be more of a challenge for today's youth. And we do have hints. So each mm-hmm. object has a hint as well as an answer. And then for the other part, I tried to pick some objects that were unusual. And we want kids and adults to write their own museum label for them. So to just kind of look at the object and imagine what it might have been used for, to come up with their own creative ideas.
So in the part of the exhibit's out at the Valley Library, right? And then there's some stuff on display at the City Museum as well.
Yes. So both of we'll have both of those activities at the museum on Sunday. But then okay. We also have some objects that we selected that are more challenging for all ages that are out at the Valley Library. And that exhibit just went up. And so it's the same idea. So we are encouraging members of the public who are at the library to write their own museum label for one or more of the objects in the case. And people can submit as many labels as they want. And we're looking for both really creative, imaginative ideas, and then also, if you think you know what it is, a more historic label. And those labels will be able to be turned in through the end of November. And then we're going to choose the most creative and best historic and actually post them in the case from January to April, along with a label that gives the actual historic information for that object.
Well, that sounds like a super fun activity.
Yeah, we're really hoping that people will enjoy it and give us some good ideas.
Without giving too much away, is there an object that you could maybe describe without telling us what it is that we could try to guess?
Well, there was one object that we're using for our Family Day program that really had me stumped and other museum folks, and it took quite a bit of searching around to figure out what it was. So I knew it was a kitchen utensil, but beyond that, it just didn't make any sense to me. So it had basically two kind of curved oval shapes that spun around on a handle.
Hmm.
And I won't give away what it is, but it's... Once I learned what it was, I thought, oh, well, I guess that makes sense. But just looking at it, it's really hard to figure out how you would use it.
Hmm. Yeah, now I'm stumped as well. We'll have to come by and check it out and get our answers. So are you expecting a pretty big turnout on Sunday?
I hope so. You know, we've had around, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 people, depending on the day. Last Family Day was also Day of Play, so it was a bigger turnout than past ones. But it's a great time to come to the museum. And, you know, even if you don't want to participate in the Museum of Civilization activities, there are lots of great hands-on things at the museum for kids and for adults. So it's also just a nice time to come get a free visit to the museum for you and your kids.
That's great. That's a great reason to come. It's definitely worth seeing. Speak from experience.
Thanks.
Do you have any advice for parking around the City Museum?
So on Sunday, it shouldn't be too bad because on the street parking and parking in the garages is free. So a lot of times there's parking on Main Street or, of course, there's the parking lot at the corner of Main and Egan that's free on the weekends.
That would be a good place, I think.
Yeah.
Great. All right, so what else does the City Museum have going on this fall?
Well, next week is our last week of our historic downtown walking tours. So if it's something you've been thinking you'd like to do, if you don't come tomorrow or next week, you'll have to wait until next summer. So we do those Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and they start at 1:30 at the museum, and they go till around 3 o'clock. And we have local guides who take people on a tour of downtown and talk about the history of Juneau and the history of people who lived here and some of the buildings. And then the tour finishes with tea at the Alaska's Capitol Inn, which is the historic home that belonged to John Olds and is right behind the museum.
Super. And, well, that sounds pretty good. Don't miss out on those. Maybe you'll be back to tell us about the next walking tour. So if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Kaya Hendrickson from the City Museum. She was here to talk about Family Day this Sunday and other events going on at the City Museum as well as the library. Family Day starts at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Is that right?
That's correct, from 1 to 3.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Kaya?
Well, we do also, coming up, we're going to be starting our fall First Fridays and Coffee and Collection series, which is a free lecture series that we do about once a month. For the October 1st Friday, we will have on view a new acquisition, the painting Bend in the River by Sidney Lawrence. And we're really excited about this. It was donated by the Friends of the Museum, and many people donated to the painting in honor of William D. D'Armond. So that will be on view starting on October 6th. The reception is 4:30 to 7, and that is free at the museum. And it'll be on exhibit through the end of October. And then our first coffee and collections will be on the 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. with a history of the Juno Garden Club.
Those both sound like great events.
Thanks.
Have you seen the painting yourself?
Yes, and it is definitely worth seeing in person. Before we received the painting, we had an image of it, and just it makes such a difference to see the real painting. It's kind of amazing. I've noticed at the museum, working with a lot of our press, you know, I see these photos of the art ahead of time, and then once you get to see the real painting in person, it's just it makes such a difference. You can see why we have museums, for people to see the work, the real work, as opposed to just printed images.
Cool. Well, that's a great sentiment. So on that note, I believe we'll wrap things up. Thank you very much for being here again, Kaya. Always great to see you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. The best way to learn a new bird song is to track it down and see the singer. Sometimes that's easier said than done. Birds can be notoriously difficult to spot, no matter how loud they are. In the case of the Chetty's warbler, it took centuries to match the secretive singer to its disembodied song. The ancient Greeks knew of this little brown bird, but it wasn't until 1819 that the Italian naturalist Alberto della Marmora definitively identified the Chetty's warbler as the reclusive author of the familiar song. One day, Marmora was walking along the densely vegetated banks of the River Var in the southeast of France when he heard a song he thought he recognized. A well-aimed shotgun blast later, and Marmora knew for sure the modestly plumaged little bird in his hand was responsible for those familiar phrases. 40 years earlier, naturalist Francesco Chetty had guessed that this was the bird, but had not been able to prove it. Marmora named the bird the Chetty's Warbler in his honor. Another of nature's puzzles solved, and a mystery no more. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support for Bird Note comes from Songbird Coffee, offering bird-friendly, organic, shade-grown coffees for over 20 years. Learn more at birdnote.org/songbird.
Support comes from Southeast Radiation Oncology Center, featuring the third annual Patient Appreciation Luncheon on Thursday, September 14th from 11:30 until 1:30 at 1701 Salmon Creek Lane. Reservations at 586-5762 or southeastradiation.com.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, host for today. And up next is my final guest, Scott Griffith. He's here to talk about the Glacier Swim Club via telephone. Welcome to the show. Are you there, Scott? One second. We're speaking with Scott Griffiths of the Glacier Swim Club. Scott, can you hear us?
Yes, sorry.
Great. Fantastic. Well, good to have you. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
All right, Scott. Well, I don't know anything about the Glacier Swim Club, so my first question is, how do you keep your swimmers from freezing? Because I assume your meets are in the Mendenhall Lake.
No. We have two pools in Juneau, inside, heated, very warm.
Good. Glad to hear that. Can you tell me a little bit more about what the swim club is really all about?
We're a youth competitive swim program for all ages. We start kids as young as five up to they graduate high school and, you know, even college kids in the summer. We have kids that are swimming once or twice a week up to kids that are swimming twice a day for 5 or 6 days a week. So pretty much, you know, learning to swim lessons all the way up to kids competing at the national level.
Wow. What's the competition like?
Living in Juneau is a little bit different than, you know, swim clubs across the nation. But we do what we call time trials just in Juneau, where just our swimmers compete for times, basically. And then we have, you know, there's teams in Southeast. We travel through there. And then we have state championships usually in Anchorage, but we'll go to Fairbanks and South Central area. And then our, you know, the higher level swimmers will have an opportunity to go to meets. You know, the biggest meet, step up, we go down to Federal Way for meets. But then, you know, we'll have swimmers going to University of Iowa, Iowa State, this December for a national level meet. They get to travel all around.
That's great. Competition, exercise, and travel. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And friends and camaraderie. Yeah, it sounds like an excellent opportunity. How many kids are in the club?
Each year we have, including our pre-comp program, we're probably around 250 kids.
Wow, that's probably almost every kid in Juneau.
It seems like it sometimes, but I'm sure there's a lot more out there, yeah.
So what more can you tell us about the upcoming competition season?
Our season kind of kicks off around when school starts. So we're just starting. We have a time trial this month, and then our first meet is we're going down to Renton, Washington for a swim meet down there. And our first big meet, championship meet, is the Southeast Champs, which will be in Ketchikan this year in December. And then later in the year, it turns into what we call championship season. We have an age group champs here in February. We have some regional level champs in Federal Way in March, and then we have our state championships for all ages in April, and that's kind of our winter season that goes through that. But this, yeah.
Are there any upcoming tryouts or time trials that you want our listeners to know about?
Yeah, this Friday at 4:30 at Diamond Park Aquatic Center, we have tryouts for our next pre-competitive session. Those are 6-week sessions that focus on getting kids ready for Glacier Swim Club or just building the competitive swim skills. We run those every 6 weeks. Anyone's eligible. All you have to be able to do is swim a length of the pool on your stomach and your back, and then you're ready for a Glacier Swim Club. There's three levels within that. We practice at both pools, and it's a nice progression to get kids ready for competitive swimming if they want to do that.
I see. So I was about to ask if the kiddos don't make the cut, are there still opportunities to swim or maybe compete locally?
Yes, definitely. If they're not quite ready to swim a whole 25 yards, then both pools offer swim lessons, starting at put your face underwater, learn how to float, and then hopefully, you know, usually they get in that, and then by the next tryouts, they're ready for our pre-comp program.
Great. And where can we find out more information about Glacier Swim Club?
Uh, dse-swim.org is our website. We got flyers posted up at both pools, or you can email me at glaciersumclub@gci.net or give me a call.
All right. Scott, is there anything we didn't cover that you'd like to add?
No, I think you got it. We're always pretty, we're very grateful for all the support in Juneau.
Great. Well, thanks for being with us, Scott, from the Glacier Swim Club. Tryouts this Friday. Get your kiddos in the pool. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Tuning in today to Juno Afternoon, our guests were Jacob Athiel and Art Roach, both from Perseverance Theater, talking about the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity. Their new production starts this Friday. We also had Michelle Brown and Andrew Bogar here to talk about the Safety and Preparedness Expo. It starts on Friday, and it'll go Friday and Saturday. We'll be broadcasting a Juno Afternoon live from the Expo on Friday at 3 o'clock. We also heard from Kaya Hendrickson from the City Museum, talking about Family Day and the Mystery Objects exhibits, as well as their upcoming events. And finally, we heard from Scott Griffiths from the Glacier Swim Club. We featured music by L. Michael's Affair, Cake, and we had a piano cover of Kendrick Lamar's Swimming Pools. On tomorrow's show, Scott Burton will host, will highlight the UAS nursing program, find out how to nominate someone to be an AWARE Woman of Distinction. Heather Mitchell will be here to highlight this weekend's Juno Cabaret, and we'll get a preview of Saturday's Diva performance. Nancy DeCherney will also be here with Arts Up. Jeff Brown is the producer of Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.